Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello and welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. Welcome to episode 3. Andrew, how are you doing?
I'm great, Barry.
Cool, good to have you back.
Did you have a pleasant weekend?
I did. I had a great weekend. What a weekend to be in Ireland with the bank holiday. You know, everyone's just kind of relaxed. Obviously, well, you don't have bank holidays up north, right?
No, we do have bank holidays.
Right, yeah. But just not this one.
No, yeah, this one, unfortunately, I was working yesterday.
Oh, God, man, you missed out majorly. I think it's my favourite of all bank holidays. It just breaks up the year so nicely. The weather was incredible. There was so much going on. There was music festivals all over the country. There was, you know, the Cork Jazz Festival, Dingle Folk Fest. There was GAA County Finals and Semi-Finals. A ton of Guinness Pro 14 rugby, obviously.
So no doubt you used your day off to do something productive and have a good time. And
I kind of watched Hocus Pocus in the morning and Casper in the afternoon.
Yeah.
But I went to see Bohemian Rhapsody at 2 o'clock yesterday, which was a very solid bank holiday Monday. And I know you saw it Saturday night.
I saw it Saturday. It was our date night. It's my wife's birthday this week, so that was our date night.
Oh, what a brilliant date.
Yeah, it was class.
Isn't it?
Absolutely class.
Yeah, so inspiring.
Yeah, I was watching it the whole time thinking, Barry's so lucky, he's in a band.
yeah, just like Queen. Yeah, yeah. Well, I was just exactly like that.
You do have a bit of a Freddie Mercury vibe.
Thank you, man. He's the greatest rock star of all time.
Although I said initially that you're halfway between Bublé and Amy Winehouse.
Right.
I don't think Freddie Mercury fits that.
Is he not?
Surely he's even beyond Winehouse.
Yeah, true.
Or certainly up there with Winehouse anyway.
Yeah, he was pretty out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was obviously a very sad story, but so inspiring and funny. And what I loved about it was you get to see the birth of all those incredible songs that we've all grown up with, those anthems. They're like anthems to the gods.
Yeah.
You know, and like I think they were Queen's Greatest Hits was the first album I ever bought after my first Holy Communion money. I went and I bought a Walkman and Queen's Greatest Hits at 7 years of age. So that was like,
wow.
Yeah. So
yeah.
It was
brilliant,
wasn't it?
It was just the build up the whole way along, the story, the kind of the amount of times they fell out with each other, and then the next day they're like, grand, we're friends again, we're going to go back making music, having a good time. Mm. And it was building up all the way to Live Aid, and the whole kind of movie climaxes at Live Aid. Yeah. And just before the Live Aid scene, my missus turns around and says, I'm really thirsty, you wouldn't get me a glass of water? I don't believe it. So I sprinted.
You didn't do it.
I did, yeah.
Oh my God, you're like the best husband on the planet.
Yeah, anyway.
Wow.
Got it done. I was back within 30 seconds.
Okay.
Sprinted
still,
down that.
You still got it.
Yeah. I still got it.
Yeah. I think we recorded our album in a place called, our last EP with Hermitage Green, the band, in a place called Rockfield Studios, which is a very famous studio in North Wales. And if you've seen that film, they recorded Night at the Opera. I don't know if you remember that moment where they go to that farmhouse.
Yes.
And they record.
Is that where that was?
That's where that was.
So wow.
I was watching it going, oh my God, this is where it happened. And when we went to this studio, one of the reasons we went there, we knew they were recording Night at the Opera there. You know, Oasis recorded Definitely Maybe there. Coldplay recorded Parachutes, and it's got a lot of history.
Yeah.
So we went there, and it's just an old farm that this dude owns. His name is Kingsley, and he just wanders around the place. He's a proper farmer, and he just rents it out to people when they want to come and record.
Wow.
So much history in the walls. There's nothing hanging or anything like that. There's no pictures. But when we got there, he'd wander into the studio every once in a while, and when he does, you just have to sit back and listen to him and let him go off. And he came in one day, and he was like, do you see that wind chime out there? And there's like, or wasn't wind chime, it was one of those wind arrows, you know, with north, south, east, and west on it. And he's like, when Queen were recording Night of the Opera, Freddie was here and he was sitting down there at the piano and he just looked out and he said, and the wind was blowing it around. And he said, anyway, the wind blows, that's where he came up with the lyric. And I was like, that's got to be bullshit, but it's brilliant. I'm going with it.
He sounds like the music equivalent of Rala.
Yes, exactly.
Paddy O'Reilly, yeah. The Irish bagman.
Yeah.
Just a storyteller.
Yeah. he has massive purpose.
Yeah.
But yeah, he can go off on tangents.
Brilliant.
All the time. Yeah.
So all the big names then: Queen, Coldplay, Oasis, and what'd you call
Stone Roses, Hermitage Green. Obviously,
Hermitage Green.
We're in the same. So it was great. I also watched a ton of rugby. Obviously, the Guinness Pro 14 kicked back into action. And it's hard not to start with Munster's very exciting win in Thomond Park on Saturday night and Rory Scannell's incredible kick. We were hoping to have Rory Scannell on the phone this morning, but he's actually flying from Dubai to South Africa at the moment. So you're going to take his place, Andrew, as Rory Scannell.
That's fine.
That's okay. So you can talk us through that last couple of minutes and the decision to take the kick and the pressure. Because, like, Andrew, if he was here, would obviously couldn't kick shite off a rope. So we need
snow
off a rope, same thing. So yeah, what do you think? Did you see that last couple of minutes in the Munster game? And
I did. Yeah. As you say, there's so many talking points in the last 5 minutes, almost as many as there were in the entire game. But obviously, Pete O'Mahony with the turnover, you could see he was just snooping about behind the defensive line.
Did you see him say to Standard?
Yes.
That was so good.
I know.
Like you'd have said, like, take the latch.
You could see he could see the way that Glasgow were shaping up.
Hmm.
Yeah, take the latch, whatever the call was. And
you
take
out the latch, I'll get on the ball.
It was someone on the inside as well. It might have been John Klein, or could it be Billy Holland? Anyway,
Billy Holland, I think.
Billy Holland, yeah. And he was kind of blocking off on the inside. Standard was blocking off on the outside. Totally illegal.
Yeah.
But it worked an absolute treat.
Yeah.
And for me, Pete was off his feet as well.
He was.
His studs were in the air.
Yeah, the ref was just on the other side of the rock.
Yes, you can see,
But I think that last 5 minutes, and even the last 10 minutes, it was so interesting to see Glasgow's tactics, fair play to them. They stuck at it. They didn't kick the ball much in the game.
Yeah.
And they could have just drilled it into the corner a couple of times and you know, kept it out of their half, but they continue to just play rugby. And Munster, we were going to find it hard to get the ball off them. So it's just like a matter of trying to drive them back and use line speed to get off the line, either chop them or hold them up and try and force them back. And they actually got them from their own 10-metre line just before the halfway. And then obviously every inch counts when you're trying to get a penalty or with a potential shot at goal.
Yeah.
So for them to get, like, for that intent at that late in the game, for Pete to have that quick decision to go, get off the line, take the latch out, get him on the ground, get a penalty. I mean, that's next level stuff. I was so impressed with that.
No, it was really. They looked really composed. They looked really kind of structured. They looked like they've coached that.
Mm.
I'm sure there's a Van Grand kind of stamp on that.
Yeah.
And just orchestrating the whole situation so Pete can get in the ball. Pete was doing, I don't know if you've ever seen, Pocock does that quite a bit. I know when we were playing Australia a few years ago, Sean O'Brien made that point. He always just kind of hovers behind the line so that when someone falls long, then they've just got a second to get on the ball. And Pocock obviously can be on that really quickly. But Pete did that. And there was about three or four phases just before. Pete was like just floating in behind the ruck at one stage. He went round to the open side and then he floated back round. Because at that stage, who cares if your line's short?
Mm.
It might work better in Glasgow or in Munster's favour if Glasgow try and play with width, because they'll cough the ball up, they might throw an intercept. They're not going to do that. So just shorten your line, take risks with your defence.
Yeah.
That's what he did, and he just popped on the ball, and it was unbelievably well executed.
Yeah, I loved how he was he was incapacitated then. He was lying on the ground for whatever reason, couldn't make a decision whether they kick to the corner or kick a goal. I think Billy Holland was put up as the captain for that split moment, and he looked like he was being a typical Billy and like playing it a little bit safe, let's put it in the corner and all that. So I think Simon Zeebo came out on Instagram and was slagging him for potentially trying to force their hand in that way. And I'd love to know who made the decision, whether it was Scans. I mean, he hadn't kicked the ball all day, and then to, you know, he's worked very hard, his legs are probably heavy, and then to make the decision, I'm going to have a pop. 80th minute of the game, you know, Thomond Park, where so many moments have happened like that throughout the years, and to have that one moment for yourself, and oh God, I don't know how kickers do it, man.
I wonder though, as a kicker in that situation, if he's honest, would he be thinking, right, I could take this where I'm not going to get a hard time if I miss it, or I'd maybe prefer this than one 30 metres out right in front, because you're a nervous wreck. You're
thinking, that's true,
I cannot miss this. So almost that's probably a more comfortable kick. Obviously, it's still incredibly, it's an unbelievable kick that he got it. So, I mean, credit where credit's due. I'm just thinking, I'm wondering the mindset of a kicker. I've never been there, so as you say, I couldn't kick snow off a rope.
Me too. Like, I'm useless, but I do feel I sometimes play a part. I have this thing that I pray to the gods of the kicking, the kicking gods, and I only use it very occasionally. Uh-huh. I used it once with Barry Keeshan. He was a Dolphin out half, and I played under 21s against Leinster with him. And I used it then, and I was like, make a name for yourself, man. Come on, kicking gods, let him get this. And he got it, last kick of the game, he won it. I used it for Raj when Munster beat Gloucester in that miracle match, and we needed the last kick of the game to get through top of the group. And I used it for Raj against Leicester once in Welford Road, where we were a point down and we won by a point. And... so I'd like to take some sort of night. I got up on my seat and I was like, come on, let this be a moment.
Okay, you still had some credit.
Yeah.
So you've used up four. I mean, at what stage does that run out?
I don't know. I don't know, man. That's why I'm so wary when I use it.
Yeah.
But I thought the other night was such a perfect moment. I think.
And you've got every one that you've used.
Yeah, I have.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fair play to you.
I totally could be making that up. go.
You know what? Scannell's not the hero. O'Mahony's not the hero.
No.
You're the hero.
Yeah, thanks, man.
You deserve all the credit you're getting.
For you to say that, other than that, it was a pretty fascinating game. I enjoyed the tactics of both sides. I think Munster would have gone out looking to enforce their set piece, and Glasgow didn't allow to do that. I think didn't kick the ball at all. I think Munster had six lineouts in the whole game, which would have taken massively from, you know, their tactics and their platform. Glasgow then had so much open field running and scored some brilliant tries.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
I don't think they deserved to lose the game.
No.
They really didn't. Yeah. I thought they were brilliant for most of the game, really. Yeah.
They kind of lost it themselves, man, I think, with that last few minutes. It was bizarre the way they were playing. They'd have kicked a touch off a penalty that they put pretty much straight across the field rather than, you know, trying to drill it in the corner. But, you know, credit where credit's due. I think the intensity that Munster showed for that last few minutes were, you know, a credit to their coaching staff. I think the you know, we've both played with Flan Felix, and we know, like, they're two of the fittest, probably the two fittest players I've ever played with, and the most intense. So I think they're bringing that level to the Munster side at the moment, where that's what they expect from the side, is to, in that final few minutes, be able to dig it out. And I think the likes of CJ Stander really stood up. He's had an interesting few weeks. I think he's been targeted by a lot of teams over the last few weeks and last few months.
He got hit hard.
Mm.
He got met really physically by the Glasgow back row a couple of times. Yeah. Have you ever seen Stander get upended, get knocked back the way he got knocked back at the weekend?
Yeah.
The intensity was really high, and there was a few scuffles early on as well, and I think that kind of just created a tone of kind of dislike or frustration, and then that kind of made it more of a spectacle for the rest of us.
Is there? Yeah, there's a bit of a bite there. Did you ever have a bit of a bite with Glasgow?
Yeah, little bits and pieces. In the past, actually, our Ulster coaches would have fallen out with Glasgow coaches, and like there would have been a few scuffles on the pitch.
Really, yeah.
The reason I remember one in particular, it was a hilarious moment whenever Ryan Wilson started screaming at Pienaar on the ground. Like, just, I can't remember what he was shouting, shouting abuse at him. And then Pete Brown, our English second row, posh guy from Cheltenham, just retired last week actually, said, "Oi! It's after the watershed."
Does that even mean?
Yeah. Mind your language.
Oh, Jesus.
I know. We just thought this has gone from really intense and really narky to hilarious within one moment. So
I love those moments.
That was one of the few moments that was diffused.
You can't take it too seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, look, I think it made for a great game, having that kind of physicality. And, you know, I think there was a lot of people that raised their hands for Joe of the Schmidt's teams over the next coming weeks. And, you know, looking at the squad that he picked going to Chicago this week for the Italy match, any surprises in there for you, or what do you think of the potential starting 15 that he might pick? Have you any?
Yeah, I think we're we're both big fans of Will Addison. He's gone unbelievably well at the start of the season. He's in the mix there. New caps, Ross Byrne, and there's one more new cap. Who's that?
One more new cap.
There's three new caps anyway.
Good question.
But I think obviously then Ireland are going to go play a few guys who kind of be bench or cover or maybe not all the big, all the cool dudes, all the big names are at home.
Still a very exciting team. For me, like if he went with Byrne and James Ryan in the second row, like what a pairing that is. How exciting that is to have the two of those guys. Their physicality, their intensity, their ability to carry over the gain line. You know, the back row, whether he'll go with, you know, I think Ruddock will probably captain the side. He's had a huge few months for Leinster. Van der Fleer has been excellent. Mm-hmm. Conan has been excellent. Byrne, I think, was the other... Was it Byrne was the other one that... That uncapped?
Yeah.
So whether he goes with Byrne or Carberry, McGrath or Cooney, any of those combinations, you know, they're pretty excellent in how they've been managing the last few weeks for their clubs.
Yeah. You'd imagine you'd go Carberry.
You think so?
Yeah, I would have thought so, yeah. Mm. I'd go Carberry, and then it's a toss-up between Luke and Cooney. I suppose the only kind of logical way to look at it is that Cooney was kind of in the driving seat in June. When he got picked for tour ahead of Luke, and since then he hasn't really put a foot wrong. Mm-hmm. And there's the kicking option as well, which isn't make or break, but if it's a 50-50 then it's going to go in his favour. So for me it's probably Cooney, Carberry, 9-10. That's pretty exciting,
isn't it?
Set of halfbacks.
I think, you know, with the centre partnership, I reckon he'd probably go with Aki and Ringrose personally, maybe Addison on the bench. I do love the way Addison's playing at the moment. Like, as a 13, that's what you're looking for me. Mm-hmm. From a 13, he's got that intent to play. He controls fourth and fifth phase by the looks of things for Ulster. He knows when to make those decisions and to when to go out the back door, or he knows how to create space, which is huge. But I think Ringrose obviously has been brilliant for both Ireland and Leinster for the last couple of years. I think he deserves a start with Aki as 12. But great to have Addison on the bench. And then
if Ringrose is going to start at 13, I mean, he's not likely to start Italy, Argentina, New Zealand, surely, is he? I don't know.
Yeah.
Someone to partner Henshaw anyway for the big games, I suppose, the Argentina and the New Zealand game. They could go Henshaw, Aki, I suppose. Or as you say, Will Addison might get his foot in the door there, depending if he gets an opportunity in Chicago.
I think
there's plenty going on, isn't there? Few years ago, you're going, the lesson that they learned at the World Cup was you cannot afford to get three or four injuries in key positions.
That's it.
And now, well, they can.
Yeah.
They can do what they want, and there's guys coming in, putting their hands up, and there's serious, serious talent and serious depth in all positions now, and it's a luxury that Joe's got, and it makes things a lot more difficult for players fighting for positions, doesn't it?
It does. Even like the likes of Stockdale and Larmour and Conway coming in here. Like, I mean, what an exciting back three if that's what he goes with. Sean Cronin, if he starts, I mean, you know, he's, you know, himself and Scannell, to be fair, have been brilliant. So to have that luxury to leave those guys on the at home for this week is brilliant, and very exciting times for Irish rugby, and looking forward to the New Zealand game in a few weeks. There's going to be a lot of headaches for sure. The Italy team, have you had a look at that?
Yeah, it's a young team. It's a fairly inexperienced team, captained by Campagnaro, which I didn't realise. I don't know if he's ever been captain before. I didn't realise he was that kind of role. He's obviously one of the most experienced guys in that team, but they'll be coming over looking to play a bit of rugby.
Yeah, I was surprised that they went with such a young team and an experienced team. I think it was a good chance for them to potentially get a scalp and against Ireland with the world watching. But it's never going to be easy against this Irish side. But yeah, I think it's going to be a great game. To be honest, it's a spectacle over there. You've been there, you know what it's like to play in these big games. So, exciting times. And just to let you know that, because we're into this test window now, and with Ireland in Chicago, and then the Guinness Series coming up in Dublin in the Aviva Stadium. We're going to go with twice a week for Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby. So it's twice the crack, twice the content. A new episode will drop on Thursday featuring our Ireland versus Italy predictions. We'll answer any Twitter questions you have. And also, we've got an exclusive interview with Conor Murray. And when I say exclusive, I mean completely inexclusive, because he spoke to everyone last week. But I reckon I asked him a few questions that no one else would ask. So here's a little taster of that Conor Murray interview right now.
They're a better team than us. Like, yeah. And it's rare you feel like that. Oh, you'll always be like, oh, we should have scored a try there and that would have been it. But like, they're just a better team at the moment.
Yeah.
And we've been to semi-finals and two semi-finals last year, so we're not a million miles away. They were an English team. And we were like the best team in Ireland. We'd be feeling a lot better. You know what I mean? It's a weird situation, but ultimately they drive you on to get better as a province and compete. And so close.
Yeah. So the old Munster Leinster rivalry and the inevitable kind of comparisons. If you're not quite Leinster and you're Munster or you're Ulster, then in my experience with Ulster, we always had this mindset where we were like, stop saying Leinster, stop saying the way Ireland do things or the way Leinster do things. Let's do things the way we want to do them. And then that would go a couple of weeks, and then someone would go, look at the way Leinster's doing that. You know, you can't help compare yourself to your interprovincial rival that's just down the road, and they're doing something subtly but better, more efficient, and they're getting more traction from doing something. There's something about their setup that you emulate, and it's very flattering for Leinster to be in that position. And then obviously the likes of Munster, Ulster, Connacht, that's the big game for them. That's the big rivalry. That's the game that they get motivated to win that game. So those games are always more intense. They're always more driven to beat Leinster. And again, that's a compliment to Leinster, the way they're doing stuff. So
I agree. I think it's a good thing. It's a healthy thing. And as you hear from Conor there, like they're you know, that inspires them or drives them on to become better and better. So
yeah. So tune in for the second edition of Barry and
that's
Andrew.
That's it. Don't forget to subscribe Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby and listen to our chat with Conor Murray on Thursday, or check it out on YouTube.
Is the English House of Rugby, have they got two episodes a week?
Yeah, I doubt it.
I don't think so.
We're just content coming out our ears at
Unlucky
this stage.
I
just love talking about rugby.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
So now we're gonna get back on Pat McCarry from Sports Joe. Producer Pat, would you please join us on the couch?
So Pat, did you get to watch any rugby the weekend? I see James Ryan got his career back on track. Back to the win.
Yeah, he's no longer a loser.
I'd say word filtered to him that you had been on his case there, and he played 77 minutes of that game, so he was not leaving that pitch until he was a winner at
good,
the weekend.
And good, James. Get your finger out.
But they, that was a good game. And then just to the Leinster production line comes up with another lad, Conor O'Brien, came on because Rob Kearney actually was having a good game. Another nice line break. Beat a couple of lads, and then I think it's a Kiwi hooker just absolutely flattened him from the side, and he didn't get up after that. Came off. Maybe he wouldn't have went to Chicago anyway, but definitely wasn't going to Chicago after that. So
how bad did it look? Is he a concern?
Yeah, he was. He was down. A couple of Leinster medics came on, and he was holding his shoulder because he just made a line break, and then just from the side, I think it's Favia was his name, and he came and just took him out from the side, like a decent enough tackle, but Kearney just then. I think maybe because it's Treviso, they're winning at that stage. I said, let's take him off to be sure. There's been no, I think Leinster will probably issue a medical update, I'd say, about that as well. But
it's one of those ones like where when you go to those games over there, they're after a big Champions Cup weekend.
Yeah.
It's a tough place to go. And the one thing you want is a win, but it's to not take any casualties. So I don't think it would be too bad. So if it isn't, I think Leinster would be absolutely delighted with getting the bonus point win over there. And blooding a few young players.
Yeah, Conor O'Brien, another lad comes out of nowhere, comes on for Kearney, gets himself a try. Like, yeah. It's just like,
it's a great finish.
They popped another one out, yeah.
Mm. I mean, a Leinster young fella coming through, is he good enough to stay at Leinster? Will we see him at one of the other provinces? I suppose.
Just three, like the hotline, the Leinster going, like, you know, three phone calls from the coaches, like, do you need him for the next season at all? Or, so, yeah, I know he was good, but yeah, I was interested in that as well. Like, it was like a dirty, like, it was just rain. Hardly anybody in the crowd, like, you know, on the TV cameras, everybody's in the covered stands, so it's just empty everywhere else in the ground. I was just kind of thinking from your perspective, what's it like kind of playing in those games over there?
Tough, Pat. From an Ulster perspective, we've got beaten over there once or twice by Zebra or Treviso, but you're kind of on a hiding to nothing, really. If you win, you're expected to win and win with a bonus point over there. For some reason, that's skewed because it's not that easy. And if anything less, if you scrape a win, you know, you get slated, really. I remember actually one of the games a couple of years ago. Stephen Ferris was on commentary, and he said before, "I'm expecting 5 points from Ulster today," and it just it distorts people's perception of how difficult a place it is to go. You have to go there and you have to get the job done, and you're often depleted, and it could be, you know, after Europe for a couple of weeks, it's a tough place to go. And going over there and getting the job done. Last season, actually, I captained the side that went to Zebra and got beat. And for so I ended up retiring.
Point.
I retired at the end of the season. And the Zebra game was the beginning of the end. For me, I was.
They stopped talking to you and stuff.
I was so bad, to be fair. Most of us were pretty bad.
Yeah.
But I was leading the way.
Well, they upped their game as well, you know. I think, in fairness, for Treviso, you know, getting a big Irish team over there and taking a scalp, whether they're depleted or not, is huge for them. And you saw the way Treviso played at the weekend.
Yeah.
The defence was ferocious, and I think they got unlucky in the first half with a couple of referee decisions. It could have been a different outcome. But yeah, I would always say, you know, big kudos to anyone that goes over there, especially Leinster the weekend, with not having their full strength team out and come out with that kind of a win.
Another guy, the centre, the American centre, Paul Emmerich played at Parma for a while.
Yeah.
And he tells a story about how he kind of, again, had another encounter with kind of mob guys, a made man, whatever. Yeah,
and
he said he was on a night out in Parma. And some guy pulled up on a moped, on a Vespa. So gangster, isn't it? Yeah. And he was like revving it and stuff to like intimidate Emmerich. So this guy came over and he kind of like, they got into an argument and Emmerich pushed him off his scooter. He fell backwards and like wrecked himself, and then Emmerich ran off. I don't know exactly how that finished, but I'm sure he went to bed that night and thought, there will be no gangster-related fallout from this encounter. And then on Monday morning, then Emmerich went into training, and one of the guys in his team said, "Hey, Paul, did you have much of a weekend?" He's like, yeah, quite enough. And he said, "Did you get into a fight?" Because he said, "You hit the wrong man." And then it turned out,
A mobster,
whatever.
What they called,
I don't know what the kids are calling them nowadays.
Yeah.
But Emmerich then had to go and meet this guy to pay him compensation.
Unreal.
Yeah, and he had to meet him in the kitchen of an Italian restaurant.
Oh my gosh. Is this another Nick Williams story? And he had his gun taped to the jacks, and so
The Nick Williams one, I'm not sure about.
Right.
I'm fairly sure about the Emmerich one.
The Vespa.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The Italian restaurant.
Yeah, that's like.
I don't know. But I remember Emmerich telling me a story. I just remember hearing the story from Nick Williams. Right. But
wow. God.
Yeah. Listen, there's locking on in Italian rugby.
Yeah.
There's actually, yeah, it looks pretty kind of tepid when you're watching it on TV. But it's what's going on behind the camera.
There's a lot of riding on those games, yeah.
Let me tell you.
With of all the games, I kind of caught highlights of it now, but saw all the other games. I missed the Ulster game. I only kind of got bits and pieces of that game. But Henry Speight looks like he's kind of, at least he's given him value for money anyway before he goes. And McPhillips doing a good job when he gets the chance. But they look decent enough. You guys are kind of the Addison fan club. It's kind of going well, and another decent game for him.
Absolutely. As you say, Johnny McPhillips, he's been very unlucky this season not to get much game time, because I thought he was one of the few guys standing up last year, and whenever the rest of the team weren't performing, he was still doing a really good job, and he's just been unlucky. Billy Burns has come in and done really well.
I think he's standout for me, McPhillips.
Yeah,
I think his speed of pass, his he always has an option inside. He'll show, you know, his movement of the ball in his hands. He's so active around the back of the ruck. His jumper from, and his timing with when he makes a dart right or left is perfect. Just keeps the defence sitting back, I think, all the time. And his speed of pass, like zipping those backdoor passes to Addison or to Lowry.
Yeah.
And he's always taking different options as well. I think he's an absolute bolter for
him. He probably he's in a luxurious position where he's got Ewan McCluskey, he's got Addison outside of him, he's got Lowry.
Yeah.
Obviously, Mikey picked up an injury there, so real shame, because he was just starting to get into his stride and get a bit of a feel for
Try again, another brilliant step, like what speed he has. And Addison, he'd have a great break for Shanahan's try.
Yeah.
Timing of offload as well there, I think, like he... throwing dummies.
Yeah.
You know what? There's not enough dummies in this game. He just kept throwing them, and people just dropping left, right, and centre, and then eventually he just offloads this handy little one-hand pass. But I was very impressed with Ulster again. Again, their intent to play. Really enjoy watching them. And
you,
a big win.
You had a bit of an issue with some commentary at the weekend.
Mark Robson's chat is always pretty funny, but funny in kind of like a cringy uncle kind of way. But he had a lot of Halloween kind of related comments at the weekend, like Michael Lowry's full of tricks and treats, and he's away. I think he said someone's away on his broomstick there at one point, which just cracks me up.
A week out from Halloween as well. Like it's on Halloween night. It's just like, feck it, I'm going to say it anyway. Yeah. I've prepared these jokes.
Yeah. I've done all this homework. He got in bother there recently whenever I was in cool comms. It was the Connacht game at Kingspan, and he was talking about how Connacht hadn't beat Ulster in Belfast since 1960.
Yeah.
He said 1960, Gary Lineker was born, Maradona, Kenneth Branagh, and then he said Jeffrey Dahmer and Richie Ramirez. And then he said
Richie Ramirez.
Night Stalker, is that him? He was a serial
killer. Oh, he's another serial killer.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and then he said, 1960 was a great year for serial killers.
During the match.
During the game, we were like, this is brilliant. It's class. That's brilliant. Great stuff. Yeah. And we kind of thought, I don't know how to answer that, but I'm enjoying it. Yeah, okay, I don't know how to follow up. But then a couple of minutes later, we just heard over the earphone, Robbo, you're going to have to apologise for that. So he had to say sorry, as if there's some serial killer Ulster supporters sitting at home going, how dare he speak about us like that? We have feelings too. But he got in bother. He was reeling about that one.
I'd say he doesn't care what he says now at this stage. He's been at it so long.
He's a big fan of yours, Robbo.
Is he?
Yeah.
Go away.
Yeah, he said you were the Gary Ringrose of your generation.
Oh, I'll take that.
High praise.
I'm a massive,
high praise, because
massive Ringrose fan.
Yeah, so. And Gary Ringrose is the Brian O'Driscoll of his generation. So
I'll take it, whatever it means. We'll tell him I'm a massive fan as well.
Yeah. I'll put you in touch, and you can.
Dude, we should get him on the show.
Absolutely, yes. He'd be great to be on the show.
Perfect. Anything else, Pat?
I was watching the Connacht game there as well, and we got Sportsfile to send us in books. You know, like they have a book out for Christmas, like great rugby moments. And so we'd kind of run a competition on the House of Rugby side. And I was watching the Connacht game back, and they were dreadful for 65 minutes. But I knew there was going to be a couple of tries scored. And then we had someone buzz at the offices, and I had to drop down the book to them. Guy Darrell, he was one of our followers of House of Rugby, came back, and Connacht had scored those two tries that I knew were coming. You know, like, but I'd missed them. So I'd missed the only good part of the game. And then for the next 10 minutes, they were bad again. Like, but I just thought, it was a real tight ground, bridge end. The grass was a little bit longer. Ospreys had a great kicking tactic. Like, kept kicking the ball in behind them. Kept kicking for Adi Alokan. Every time they got the ball, spotted him, kicked it to him. And there was one moment I thought was very funny where Addy Loken just took a high ball. He shelled a couple, but he took a high ball, and then he just saw two boys coming at him and just tried to call a late mark like that. And the ref was like, "No, it's too late," and he got pounded all in the space of a couple of seconds. Like, but
The mark can be confusing, yeah. Can't it?
When it's like, when can you call it? How much time do you have to call it? Like, so I was kind of wondering, did that kind of stuff ever happen to you boys? You know, just seeing someone coming in your direction and trying to call a mark at the last second.
I hated having to call marks, because there was a time there when it was, you didn't know whether you could get off the ground or what. And
did you play in those days? Did you?
Yeah.
Did you play when you had to make a mark?
On the pitch?
No.
Another Neil Williams story.
Those were the days.
I remember we played against Sale in Thomond Park. I think it was around 2008 or 2009, and we were giving them a bit of a bait, and Sebastian Chabal was playing for them at the time, and he was back in their 22 when we put a big high long kick, a bit too long, and it went to him. We had a good line chasing up, and I presumed that he would call a mark, or there was that little split second where he didn't know what he was going to do. And I think Chabal is one of those players that he's unreal, and he's very physical, and he's physically talented, but I don't think he knows the rules sometimes. You know, he was one of those kind of players, so he didn't know whether he should call a mark or something, and I kind of knew that, so he kind of caught it, and there was this brief moment of knowing it was going to happen, and he just stood there and he growled at us. He just kind of went rawr, rawr, rawr. And I actually started laughing. I remember Luke McAllister was standing beside him, and he was just like, "What the fuck are you doing?" And then everyone just jumped on him, and we tackled him into touch. And that was one of my favourite moments in Thorn Park.
I'll have to go back and see if I can find this clip. Yeah, yeah. Just like a bear. You're like, "I don't think that's allowed. I'm going to tackle you anyway here." Like, it got pounded. Because you surely would have the thing where you're targeted every now and then, or the ball keeps coming your way, or. It is a big tactic for teams, isn't it? Just putting it high up, let's test Trimble out here. Or have you ever had that before?
You mean specifically me?
Yeah, let's test Trimble.
I remember actually playing the Ospreys, and I had... So Tommy had just left and was playing for the Ospreys. Tommy knew me very well at the time, obviously. And I had just moved from centre to the wing, so there was a few kind of nuances. Even just high ball reception, I was just kind of getting mm-hmm. to grips with it. And it was coming into the game more. Whereas before, kind of, no one really did that for some reason.
Kick tennis for a while,
yeah. And I remember one game off a restart. James Hook was about to kick off, and he looked at Tommy, and Tommy had obviously said to him, "Trimble can't catch." Yeah, but then Hook obviously, he wasn't sure which one was Trimble.
All right.
So he looks at Tommy and he goes.
listening, there was a nod there.
Yeah. And I looked at it, I thought, "I know what's going on there. Tommy has screwed me over." He denies it to this day, but I know what's going on.
To be fair to him, he wasn't wrong, was he?
Believe it or not, I caught that one.
Yes.
Of course you did.
The other game we kind of chatted a little bit over the weekend was the All Blacks game against dropping them in Japan to play the third Bledisloe game against Australia, but you know they're only a couple of weeks away from coming here. But just looked so impressive again, scoring tries in the last 5 minutes of the first half as well, and just loved the shithouse tactics from the All Blacks as well, like the dirty tactics and taking guys out off the ball as well. And the one I liked was the scrum where they all started to go one way, shape back in the other direction. And Liam Squire just came around the back of the scrum and just took Jack Dempsey out and was just like, "You ain't taking part in this play." Like, they still needed Rico Ioane to make a break, and he did so. And I think he got Barrett away for one of his tries. But just love that type of stuff from the All Blacks. Mm. Like, you know, Ireland are going to be getting, you know, their faces rubbed in it there in a couple of weeks now. Like, so as great as they are, I actually love that they can do the dirty stuff as well.
Yeah, I actually have to agree with you completely. Like, when people lose their minds on Twitter, which they did over the weekend because of that moment, and I think the Aaron Smith moment where he took a block, he just ran straight across half the Aussie backline as they were trying to scramble back to catch Ben Smith, and he blatantly changed his line of running and blocked them off, and then you'd yellow card for the Aussie hooker that came on, which, you know, he was in antagonised as well to do that. And it was like,
But at the same time, there it's like a book. They just know when to do it, when to turn the screw. And you know, fair play to the Aussies. I thought they came out and you got to play against New Zealand, and they went at them like they really. They, you know, and it shows Ireland, as you said, they're playing them in a couple of weeks. What kind of way Ireland have to go about it? And it is, you got to go out and play end-to-end rugby. You got to have a go at them. They got Australia, probably lost it in the green zone. They're a bit too panicky. Foley tended to kind of throw wild passes. As far as to take anything from that, from Ireland's perspective, it would be once they get into that green zone, is they got to take control and cool the jets to a certain extent, not throw those wild passes, allow the likes of Sexton and whoever's playing at nine and maybe another back to make those big decisions after fourth or fifth phase or sixth phase in the green zone. But
that's where Ireland thrive, though. When they get in the green zone,
yeah,
they come away with points more often than not. And again, in the past, it's because you've got, obviously, Schmidt pulling the strings, Sexton and Murray, so big kind of responsibility on whoever it is running that nine, Cooney, McGrath, Marmion, whoever it is, kind of organising that and running that and kind of being as efficient and stingy and kind of ruthless in that green zone as Ireland have been for the last couple of years. But just the New Zealand-Australia rivalry, it's never going to be matched, really, but New Zealand-Ireland rivalry is really kind of getting more intense and kind of there's more going on off the pitch and there's more chat. we experienced that a couple of years ago after we beat them in Chicago. Then we played them in Dublin 2 weeks later and they were fired up. That was when
Fekitoa,
Zeebo got his head taken off.
Yeah.
And
Henshaw got, oh no, was it Jared Payne or Henshaw got KO?
Henshaw got KO early in the game, the shoulder to the head. Yeah.
And then when they scored early on in the game, Israel Dagg was screaming in our faces, you know, and we were going, again, it's kind of similar to what we were talking about earlier on with the Munster-Leinster, Ulster-Leinster, the rivalry. They had so much respect for us that they were so fired up. It's almost, wow, we're on their radar.
Yeah.
Whereas before, we wouldn't have even, they would have just thought, we'll probably beat Ireland. We'll do a research, obviously. We'll know the players, we'll know the way they play. But now Ireland are a threat. You know, I still don't think Ireland are the favourites, but the rivalry is such that New Zealand really take that seriously. And again, Joe is a big reason for that.
Yeah.
There was a time when I was in the 2012 tour when they went down to play the All Blacks three times. And I was chatting to Manu there and just kind of saying, any Irish guys you're looking out for, any guys we should keep an eye on? And he just goes, Paul O'Connell, he's a good player. Like, you know, and I was like, oh, Paul O'Connell's out. He's injured. Like, and he goes, the rest of those guys are pretty good. You don't know any of us, do you? Like, and it was just that thing. And I remember Brian O'Driscoll used to say that. It's like, they don't respect us. And why should they? You know, because we haven't beat them yet. Like,
I remember when we were playing South Africa a couple of years ago, JP Peterson, I think journalists love that. Love putting guys on the spot and saying, tell us who specifically, apart from O'Connell and O'Driscoll, who are you looking out for? And then JP Peterson was put on the spot and he said, apparently he was talking about me, but he didn't know my name.
Oh.
And apparently he called me David Skrella. The French 10, wasn't it? It was in Toulouse, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And someone put it together and they're like, I think he means Trimble.
Okay, right. Or Strettle, maybe? Like, was the Strettle the
David Strettle,
I'd say he just kind of mashed you all together. Because he's blonde.
That could be it. Mystery solved.
There you go.
That's South African arrogance there, isn't it? Like, just to kind of, who are they as well? But the other one I was kind of getting was the, when I was listening back to the House of Rugby English version last week, was James Haskell was on, and he had a bee in his bonnet about English arrogance and this perceived thing where everybody thinks that the English are these kind of guys that kind of look down their nose on everybody and they're the bad guys. And I think we have a clip of it here. I think it'd be an interesting one to have you guys have a listen to and talk about.
We'll ask one thing. I'm always interested about the English arrogance thing, just in having been lucky enough to play for England, and it's something that's levelled against the team a lot. It's almost, I found playing for England, we're often apologetic. Yep. Playing for England, it's the complete opposite. We're often on the receiving end of quite a lot of what I would class as arrogance because, I mean, you know why everyone hates England? Because of, you know, 500 years of empire building. And nobody likes England. And that's something you come to terms with as a player. And everyone wants to beat you. Yeah. There's nothing better than beating England. And everyone says, oh, arrogant English. But actually, you know, I've seen things and little bits and pieces against teams I played for where I'm thinking if I did that or I conducted myself in that way, it would be... you know, it would be a nightmare. That would be kind of in the newspaper kind of stuff.
Give us an example.
Well, no, I mean, I've actually got something saved up for the Six Nations, but I remember just watching a video of some people singing a song of essentially assaulting England, and I was thinking if we did that, that would be just terrible. And I just think that it's interesting. Everyone does talk about this English arrogance, where I find as an England player... We do everything not to show that, and I think it would help the team sometimes. I think it would be quite good.
Isn't
to have
that what Eddie came in and instilled, though, was a bit of get your jaw jutting again and...
Yes, he did. He did in terms of having that confidence and what we should be doing. But if you always watch, you know, I think in my first time with him, until we won the Grand Slam, was the only time we celebrated after a game. The only time, if you watch back all the footage of everything, literally posing for the photo at the end of a thing with whatever it might be, Calcutta Cup and whatever, no smiles, business on, no celebrating, no whooping, no in your face, no nothing. And that was the same, even in Australia, same thing, finished the game, business. Even the Six Nations, business, 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 until we actually got some silverware and the job was done.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting with the English arrogance. I think... you know, I remember I saw an article once and I stupidly looked at the comments on it. It was an article about myself, obviously arrogance and ego got a bit the better of me, and I decided to look at it because it said at the bottom in the comments section.
In your daily Haskell Google.
In the daily Haskell Google, yeah, where the alerts go up. And it said in the article it was about myself and English rugby, and in the bottom, the comments section, which you should never go and ever.
Why would you ever do that?
Because I realised that's where people's souls go to die. Like, people who log on to newspaper articles and set up a profile and comment, they are the worst of the worst of the worst. There's a space in hell reserved for them. And this person said, you can sum up the problem with English sport, right? Not just rugby, but English sport and English rugby in two words, James Haskell. And I was like, so essentially...
Did you up like it?
Trying to get up because it was a name mentioned. But I thought I was actually blown away by that. I thought I am responsible for why everybody hates England.
Yeah, so you can just hear James going on. Interesting to know that he's creeping around online comment sections as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, this whole thing of like that the English are the bad guys and they're always a team to beat as well. Like, is it still that way? Because I was looking back at Haskell's record and... Like, he's played Ireland 9 times, won 4, lost 5. Like, so it's not this kind of thing that they're the dominant team anymore, but are England still the team like that you want to beat when you're going into a test match?
Yeah, I think England are. I wouldn't buy too much into the whole tradition and the old enemy, and I wouldn't get too carried away with that. When you get on the pitch, they're just normal fellas. They've just got this reputation, and I suppose maybe, as he says, summed up in Haskell, I don't know why, Joe seemed to be doing wonders for his brand. He's doing really well on the podcast. He's obviously...
He plays up to it as well. I think it's banterful more than anything. Mm. I think that rivalry, and I think the fans play up to it, players play up to it, and, you know, it's like, as he said, it does go back a long time with that empire building... attitude, the Irish relationship with England is quite... I think Tommy Tiernan summed it up before for me when he was like, we like to see the English lose at things like sport and war. That's perfect. You know, it's never going to stop, I don't think, but it is kind of a...
I think, it's almost like they don't get the same history lessons. Like, you know, why would they in their history lessons go on about, yeah, and we screwed over this country here now. They're just going to do their own thing. But their history lessons are all about, well, we got these boys came over and, you know, kicked the crap out of us here and did this here. Like, so I remember talking to, just like a girl before about, you know, why didn't we support England if they support us? And you're like, because X, Y, and Z. And she's like, I didn't know that as well. But... Like, is there... They always seem to be that team to beat. But again, like, I think when Eddie Jones came in and it worked for a couple of years, like, short term anyway, like, who knows how it's going to go from going into the World Cup. But he kind of... He played on that, didn't he? Like, he actually brought the bad boys back in, and Hartley and Brown and Haskell and stuff like that. Yeah. And they came in and they just kind of... Everybody hates us, so let's play up to it. I think that's how it kind of worked for a couple of years.
They embraced it. I think that's a kind of fairly strategic tactic from them. Just embrace it. This is who we are. No one likes us. That's not going to change. That's the way we are.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, no, I thought it was good. But yeah, and he also, I think he called you out, I think, on that show about...
he did, yeah.
He's found out that you've been...
I've been trolling him.
Yeah.
Everyone's been trolling him, to be fair. And so many people are trolling him that he didn't even spot that I'd been trolling him. It just slipped in there amongst other comments.
How do you troll him?
Just David Brent references.
Underneath his Instagram posts.
Yeah.
And so on.
With an anonymous account.
Spineless.
Standard trolling. I have a question for Haskell.
Go on.
James, is it true that you do a great Rob Howley impression? And if you do, we'd love to hear it, please. Gotcha.
All right, well, we mentioned earlier before we headed to Chicago, Pat got to speak with Gary Ringrose last week at the launch of Ireland's new home and alternative jerseys made by Canterbury. So we're going to have a quick listen to that now.
Good start to the season. Got a try there recently enough at the weekend, and looks like it's gone pretty well for you already. Happy that you've able to had a run into it as well and doing well?
Yeah, it was off the back of the tour, which seems like a while ago now. So it was a couple of weeks of tough training, and everyone on the tour is pretty keen to get back playing as soon as possible. So luckily enough, it's been okay. Obviously not with the game against Scarlets, it's not ideal, but it's a good start so far. Still a lot to improve, and kind of as a group we're learning loads each game and seeing, you know, a ton of areas that need improvement, particularly going into this week now, and the games ahead is a pretty hectic schedule, so we'll have to do whatever we can to kind of be at our best.
And we're talking to Jason Cowman there earlier in the week. He was talking about all the player management plan and how that's worked out as well. Do you guys have an input on that? Like, I know you probably asked for your opinion and stuff, but like, is most of it just like, listen, I'm playing this week, this is what I've been told? Is that how it works?
Yeah, sure. Selection is something that's never in your control, and no players ever to be able to pick themselves or not. So you kind of just work as hard to be in as best position physically possible, available for selection, and then kind of the rest is sort of out of your hands. With the schedule, such tough games that kind of just such an emphasis on recovery and rehab and staying in shape and injury free. So kind of the responsibility is on the players to do what they can there, and the rest is out of their control, and there's no point really worrying about it or overthinking about it.
And have you ever at any stage of your career, even back in schools or anything like that, ever felt the need to go and ask why you weren't playing in a certain position or weren't even playing as well? Have you ever been slapped down for doing something like that?
I've been, over the years, been dropped and selected and picked some weeks, not others. So it's just part and parcel of it. And as I say, you focus on training as hard as you can and keep improving those areas, and as well as staying in best shape possible through recovery and rehab, stuff like that. So you kind of just do what you're told. You know what I mean? It's my job or our job anyway to be the best version of ourselves. It's not our job to pick the team or anything like that. So we just sit back and do what we're told.
And the likes, again, as we mentioned, of someone like James and Dan Levy and the boys who all broke through that last season as well. When you're getting back for pre-season training, what's it like again? I know everybody kind of talks about this kind of mentality that's there in Leinster as well, but are you guys really pushing each other hard? And is there like hard words even said in pre-season as well?
Well, we're incredibly lucky at Leinster with the competition there and right across the team, and certainly at centre now with Joe Tamani and then Tom Daly as well. Came back the end of last year with his ACL and what is good to go. He's good to go from now, along with the rake of other centres. So there's a lot of competition in there. So we're all working incredibly hard to be lucky enough to be selected, and then obviously try and perform at our best as well. So it's there's no complacency or anyone getting comfortable amongst the group.
And just the last one for me then is just the whole kind of slate of games that's coming up in November. You're over there in Chicago for that game against New Zealand as well, but how great would it be to be involved against them at the Aviva Stadium?
Yeah, it would be. I mean, you always dream of playing against the All Blacks or playing against New Zealand. They're number one for a reason. It's always a tough game, and it's kind of it's a pretty tough test, along with the other four games as well. There's no easy game amongst the series, so from personally to be lucky enough to get involved in any of them would be delighted. But I think at the end of the day, certainly in this position now, don't really look forward or worry about them. It's kind of focusing on the province and ultimately trying to put your hand up for selection there, try and do as best you can for the province, and then, as I was saying, with regards to selection, it's kind of out of your control. Whatever happens there, it's just don't worry about it too much.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Okay, but it's time for our Guinness Made of More Player of the Week. We put out a poll on Monday after all the Guinness Pro 14 games and asked for your top performer. Pat, the results.
The results, I've got them here. We had this week, it was James Tracy, Stuart McCloskey, Peter O'Mahony and Rory Scannell. Dubai, Mr. over in Dubai at the moment, heading to South Africa, and Scannell won it. Scannell got 42% of the vote, and I think
fair enough.
That kick probably got him a good few percent anyway. Yeah. So
balls of steel, Scannell. I think you can't go wrong with that. It was some effort after 80 minutes and to get a huge win for Munster. So behind that,
yeah, fair enough.
We'll have to come up with some kind of prize or something like that.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Yeah, no, because we're like, oh, well done, Roy.
Trophy. Yeah. A Joe pillow. You're getting a Joe pillow. Okay, now it's time for hashtag AskHOR. Pat, have we any questions from Twitter?
Yeah, we got a few in there. So thanks, everybody, for that. First one is Willie. His Twitter handle is @ChelseaFan50. And he wants to know, 40 years since the All Blacks were beaten by Munster, and he's wondering why there was no anniversary game or no kind of game, especially with the All Blacks being over, to commemorate that result.
It'd be a great idea. Is it
78,
40 years.
Yeah. So, it's a shame they couldn't hook something up there, isn't it?
They're afraid we'd beat them, I'd say. That's probably what it is. We came so close the last time. We raised the hearts and souls of the nation, and then we dashed them. Yeah, that would be unreal. I don't know if that's going to ever happen again, really, is it? With the midweek games, that seems like it's something that's...
You got your play, didn't you?
We did.
Just leave it at that, would you?
Play is still going in New York, I believe. Good call, Willie, but sure, look, we'll go for a few pints and celebrate all the same.
Is it at Willie, a.k.a. ChelseaFan50? Is that...
I think it's just at ChelseaFan50.
Okay. I actually know who that is.
Oh, God.
I do. Hi, Willie. Hope you're well, man. Huge Chelsea fan.
Michael, what is it? Michael Harry, he asked us, do you guys think, or even myself as well, that Wales could be dark horses for the 2019 World Cup?
Yeah, I think I responded to him on Twitter about this. Yeah. They could. I mean, who knows? I mean, I think the autumn internationals would tell a lot, right? They've got Australia, Scotland, which would be two big tests. If Australia are in their World Cup group, so I think if they can beat them, they can get out of that group. Mm. So it'd be interesting to see. I haven't seen a huge amount of them, obviously, since the Six Nations last year, which they were pretty strong and they were very close to winning it. So, yeah, what do you think?
Well, traditionally, they struggle in the autumn, and then between the autumn and Six Nations, then they improve massively. So if that happens, then they'll be peaking at the right time. But yeah, obviously, you know, a side like Wales, there's enough strength there to do a bit of damage.
Mm-hmm. And we had Andrew Kiley, he got onto us there and late last night, and he said John Ryan is getting the shout for Ireland. Like, Ireland often call him into the squad, but Stephen Archer still isn't kind of getting in there, and he kind of wonders why Archer maybe isn't, you know, in Joe Schmidt's good books at the moment.
Yeah, it is a little bit strange, I suppose. Mm. One coach sees value in kind of one trait that one player's bringing, and then the other one kind of maybe just slightly different styles. Honestly, I'm not sure we're qualified to comment on front rowers or tight heads.
Notion.
All I could think of was just maybe a couple of like I say Ryan probably comes in and does a job for Joe, you know, that kind of thing, if you trust guys. Like, I was thinking was a couple of disciplinary things recently for Archer, like where he kind of has given away penalties or got yellow carded there in the Champions Cup, but I think Joe always would have went with Ryan anyway. Ryan probably trusts him a little bit more, so that's my take on it anyway. But the final one we had actually was from Fiona Steed, and she's asked us, will there be any more John Hayes stories?
We should actually have a weekly thing with John Hayes. Imagine getting John Hayes in the couch. That's what we should do. Wow.
Yeah, I love the fact that he's got his wife to stand up for him.
Yeah, for anyone that doesn't realise, that's Johnny's wife, Fiona, who is always fighting battles for him, really, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I know, that's brilliant. Keep them coming, Fiona.
Yeah, we could do it a few more dirty stories on Hazy. But yeah, let's get him in here to talk, to defend himself without his wife.
I'll give up. I actually don't think there'd be room for me on this couch if you came and sat here. But yeah, that's it. So thanks everybody for that. And yeah, keep them coming. Keep them coming next week as well. November games, so I'm sure we'll be flooded with questions now about selections and who should start and stuff like that as well. So it should be good.
Yep. Okay, right. Thank you, everybody, for your comments, for your questions, for listening, and for watching on YouTube. Thank you to everyone who is responsible for putting this show together. Big thanks there. Thank you to Pat for coming on and for putting all this together. This has been Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness, and we'll see you on Thursday.
You were listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.